From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar. Massive protests in Honduras with a demand that the theft of last week's presidential election be halted and that opposition candidate Salvador Nasralla's victory, which was apparent a week ago, be recognized by election authorities and the international community. For more on that and other matters in and around Central and South America and the Caribbean, we spoke with our reporter from south of the border, Tony Solo, from Managua, Nicaragua. Okay, Tony, well, it's a week after the Honduran election plus, and no official result, although an awful lot of chicanery going on there, and we've got some other things to cover first, so let's jump right in.
Yeah, and maybe we can have a quick roundup of stuff that would be useful for people to know, and if we have time later on, maybe go back to one of the more important items.
Yeah.
Over the last week, there was a very good news for Evo Morales in Bolivia, and he is now eligible to stand for re-election in the next elections.
Good.
And I've forgotten when they are, and I think it's 2020 or 2021, something like that. But he'd previously been barred from standing for re-election by the Bolivian Constitution, but as a result of a judicial and popular vote process, it looks as though he's overcome that obstacle.
Right, and that's next year, by the way. It's 2019.
2019. Oh, right, okay. So then in Chile, it looks as though Sebastián Piñera, according to the polls, but, you know, we have our reservations about these polls because they've been shown to be so misleading in the past. He has a slight lead over Alejandro Guillier, who's the mainstream Social Democrat candidate. And Piñera, of course, is a candidate for Chile's right wing.
Right.
But let's see how that goes. That's on December the 19th, the second round of that election, the runoff.
Right.
Another important thing to note is that the municipal elections are scheduled for December the 10th. Which I think is next Sunday
Venezuela.
In Venezuela,
yeah.
And that'll be another big test for the popular support for the government of Nicolas Maduro, because although they are local elections, everything in Venezuela is so polarized that these kinds of electoral processes end up being in effect referendums on the government.
That's right.
Or put another way, referendums on the opposition.
Or a staging opportunity for the opposition to, you know, smash helicopters into the courts or put strings across the road and so people fall off their bicycles and motorcycles or whatever.
Right. And it looks as though the opposition have finally got some sense, because they have been engaging in talks that look as though they're making progress, quite good progress, with the government. Backed up by support from different governments, right-wing governments and left-wing governments, acting as mediators. The talks have been held in the Dominican Republic. Apparently the first set of talks have been quite successful, and they've scheduled a second round for, I think it's December the 15th, about four or five days after the municipal elections. So that's quite positive for Venezuela, because it might mean some relaxation in the economic warfare. And of course, those talks are very much opposed by Luis Almagro.
Right.
But perhaps we can come back to the role of the OAS in the region when we start talking more about Honduras.
Yeah.
And other stuff that's going on in Argentina over the last 10 days, there's been another murder, in effect, by the police of a young Mapuche. The Mapuche are indigenous minority in Argentina and Chile. And they've for decades they've been engaged in protests to reclaim land that was stolen from them, both in a long time ago and more recently by big corporations. And as a result, they're the victims of police repression, particularly in Argentina. And another Mapuche, a young Mapuche activist, he was actually shot in the back by the Argentinian police and killed. So that's a big deal. The Milagros Salas trial is still going on, which is a clear example of the way Mauricio Macri's administration is using the judicial system to attack political opposition. And also the other big thing in Argentina that's very negative for the government, of course, is the disappearance of this Argentinian Navy submarine.
Yeah.
With 44 crew.
Sailors, yeah, right.
They just seem to have lost it. And the families of the crew, who you can bet your bottom dollar, are mostly right wingers. Even they are extremely fed up with the government for its completely lacking response. You know, lacking in humanity, lacking in efficiency. To this terrible disaster for Argentina and for its armed services.
Yep.
So then, that's a quick roundup. Another important thing to remember that's going on is the non-implementation of the peace process in Colombia, and who knows where that's going to lead. The latest episode in that. Do you remember we were talking a couple of conversations ago about the special judicial jurisdiction?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Well, as that process has developed, the Supreme Court made some changes to that jurisdiction, very much against the spirit of the agreement. And then when that agreement got constitutional approval to be voted on in the legislature, the legislators themselves made another series of changes. So in effect, they've given all those changes have meant that the special judicial jurisdiction that was meant to be fair across the board to make it possible for victims to get reparation from both sides,
right,
which very clearly meant that most of the victims were victims of the armed forces and the paramilitaries associated with the Colombian government over the last 20, 25 years. And now all those people are immune. And that completely overturns not just the spirit, but the very letter of the peace agreement. And it seems that's going to put the peace agreement in crisis, but we don't know how that crisis is going to express itself.
Yeah, I mean, this is supposed to operate more or less as a truth commission. However, also part of it is supposed to be reparation and guarantees against it being this kind of abuse being repeated.
Yeah, so in effect, that means that the great majority of victims who were victims of the government and the army over the last 25, 30 years, at least, will get nothing.
Right.
Another important thing to look at is what's happening in Ecuador, where former President Rafael Correa is back in the country for a conference of the Alianza País political party, and there's a split in that party between the people who support Rafael Correa and the people who support the current president Lenin Moreno, who's regarded by most of the party, a small majority, because he has substantial support as well, especially within the among the deputies in the national Ecuador's legislature. And there's a split in the party, but the party conference is trying to expel Lenin Moreno from the party because he's completely betrayed the electoral program on which he was elected.
Right, this is where the split manifests. He gets elected with the full support of the party on the party's program, and he takes office and he turns around and he acts as if the opposition won and he was leading the opposition.
Yeah, and very clearly he'd been in talks of some kind or another with the opposition all during the election campaign.
Right, developing a program to govern, basically.
Yeah. Yeah, so let's see how that pans out. Maybe that's something we could come back to, because there's a couple of interesting points there. But it's much more important, I think you'll agree, to start talking about the election in Honduras.
Yeah, because we're watching essentially the theft of the election right before the eyes of the world. And so far, nobody's talking about it in those terms, but not enough people are talking about it in those terms. So let's start that conversation.
Yeah, what has happened for people who haven't been following events there, and perhaps we should start before we start doing that kind of analysis, on why should anybody care? And we've had this conversation, we've discussed this in our last conversation. Why does anybody care about a tiny country of 9 million people? And you pointed out its strategic position, its value as a political kind of pawn in the regional chess game.
Right.
And I think, and if one looks at it in a regional context, it's very clear that one of the reasons that the United States is so anxious to make sure that Honduras stays within, under its control politically, and that's why, and as we'll see later on, the United States government is essentially supporting the fraud, and that is because if they lose Honduras, and to put it in those terms, if they lose Honduras, as it were, then that's another country that will be supporting Venezuela.
Right.
And that's in this particular historical conjuncture, that's probably the most important immediate reason why the United States and the Organization of American States, which it controls, is facilitating the fraud in Honduras.
Well, and you know, if you look at, just build layers on top of that, add some bricks, if you will. excuse the pun, but you know, if Venezuela gets to stand and go back to the role, you know, that it was playing in constructing an independent, Western Hemisphere, that being independent of the United States, able to exercise its own sovereignty and self-determination, and to develop, a unified economy, that means that Brazil. It is removed from the clutches of the coup also, and is allowed to follow that path, which, of course, is the B in BRICS, which means that the global multipolar project that's been under development for quite a while gets, you know, put back on track, at least as to its Western Hemisphere component.
Yeah. And, of course, as you pointed out last time, another very important reason for the United States to hang on to Honduras and keep it under its control is that it has its probably its most important military base in the region at the Soto Cano Palmarola Air Base in the middle of Honduras,
right,
just outside Comayagua. I think that's about an hour and a half north of Tegucigalpa, the capital.
I guess, I don't know.
So they, and of course that's the base for Task Force Bravo, and there are other bases in the region, of course, but Soto Cano Palmarola is probably the most important one from the point of view of the United States Southern Command.
Yeah.
Anyway, so what has happened in those elections? I mean, perhaps you'll help me if I get anything wrong on the way, Don, but yeah. I mean, on Sunday, whenever it was, what was it, the Sunday the 26th?
Yes, that's right. Yeah, Sunday was the 26th, right.
Yes, yeah, so they had their elections, and as has happened in various elections, this reminded me so much of the election in Mexico in 2006, and for people who would be slightly older than me, they probably vividly remember the election in 1988, in which Carlos Salinas Gortari stole the election from Cuauhtémoc Cárdenas, the kind of progressive social democrat candidate back then. But what happened in Honduras is that as the count progressed, and the electoral tribunal gave out the first preliminary results, with 57% of the vote counted, the progressive candidate Salvador Nasralla had a 5% win over the sitting president, who was running for re-election, which many people regarded as illegal. But that's by the by, and we can talk about that in the regional context perhaps in a minute. But then, suddenly, the electoral tribunal shut down the count for about 4 hours, and then when it restarted the following morning.
Right.
They changed. This is a detail that people may not realize, because it's not being publicized at all by the mainstream corporate media. They changed the hard drive on which all the electoral data had been entered. Right?
Come on. I know. It's true.
So,
it was a day and a half, by the way. It was more than a few hours. It was actually a day and a half that they had suspended the count. But go ahead.
Yeah, so I'm, but I'm the, that that it was that crucial four-hour period in which they alleged that they had technical difficulties, right, that they switched the hard drives.
Right, yep.
And their excuse was, oh, it wasn't big enough for all the data.
One wonders, though, wasn't the data already entered on Sunday? Were they adding more data to it after the polls closed? And what data could they add other than the vote count?
Well, and so then... So now what's happened is that at that point, kind of, and as you say, the count was delayed for a day and a half, that, yeah, and the whole mechanism kind of ground to a halt.
Right.
The election observers from the European Union and the election observers from the Council of Latin American Electoral Experts, led by a very prestigious guy called Nicanor Moscoso, who's the previous president of Ecuador's Electoral Tribunal or Electoral Authority. And both those organizations said that there were big problems with the count, the delays were unacceptable, and they were urging the Honduran Electoral Authority to get their act together and get the results out in a credible way. So the response of the Honduran Electoral Authority was to say, all right, well, we'll have the definitive results on Thursday night. And then on, if you're following their website through Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, you could see that the count was being reversed in such a way that on each of those days, the gap between the sitting president, Juan Orlando Hernandez, JOH as they call him in Honduras, and Salvador Nasralla was becoming less and less with every passing day.
Right.
Until on Thursday, by Thursday afternoon, he'd overtaken Nasralla,
right,
having something, and they were giving him something like 42.9% for JOH against President Hernandez, against 41.3 for Nasralla. Those were the figures. But I know nobody took those seriously. So not even the election observers were taking that seriously.
Right.
And so they then, with the combination of massive street demonstrations,
yeah,
denouncing the fraud, and this behind-the-scenes pressure. There must have been behind-the-scenes pressure, you know, from the election. You can almost hear the election observers from the European Union and the Organization of American States saying to the Honduran Electoral Authority, look, steal the election if you want to, but for goodness sake, make it credible.
Right.
You can almost hear them saying it, right?
Well, that's pretty much... The New York Times almost as much says that. They say that pressure from the EU and the OAS persuaded the commission not to announce Hernandez as the winner on Thursday.
Right. So then what happens subsequent to that? Well, Jorge Orlando Hernandez declared a state of emergency, imposed a curfew from six in the evening till six in the morning,
right,
in an attempt to control demonstrations against the electoral fraud.
They were massive.
Any of that.
The New York Times called them huge, okay, so you can imagine what it was.
Yeah, and there were massive nationwide demonstrations against the fraud, and during that, the as usual, the Honduran security forces, the police and the army, engaged in very serious repression against people perceived as posing a threat to the authorities, and they actually killed seven people, and among those seven people was a pregnant woman and a 17-year-old girl.
Now, see, this is left out of the New York. Here's the New York Times' rendering of this. It says, pressure from international election monitors sent by the European Union to the OAS persuaded the commission, controlled by allies of Mr. Hernandez, not to announce him as the winner on Thursday. As violence and looting overtook peaceful opposition protests at the end of last week, the government responded with a crackdown. declaring a 10-day curfew from 6 p.m. to 6 a.m. and sending soldiers into residential streets to enforce it.
Imagine what the coverage would have been if that happened in Venezuela.
Absolutely. Okay. And then everybody's locked down at night. So now they're banging pots and pans from their balconies. Yeah. And people that actually go to their front door to do it find themselves getting tear gassed when they open their front door.
Right. So then, the response of Nasrallah and his team, which include former President Mel Zelaya and Mel Zelaya's wife, Xiomara Castro, and the leading members of the Honduran resistance, like Juan Barón and all those people, they're calling for peaceful demonstrations. The looting that's taken place seems to have been coordinated by the police working together with organized crime gangs like the Maras.
Right.
And that has been documented on social media, but I haven't seen any reports, any clear. Oh no, there was one clear report in the El Libertador progressive news outlet that specifically stated that the police and the army were coordinating with, and they specified the gangs that the police and the army were coordinating the looting with, so as to make the Nasrallah's opposition supporters look bad and give the security forces a pretext to kill them. But Nasrallah and his people have been calling very, very clearly for peaceful demonstrations, and they had a huge demonstration yesterday during the day, and I haven't seen this report confirmed, but one of our friends in Honduras sent us a message saying that the response of the authorities to that massive demonstration was to extend the curfew, making it start from 12 noon.
Wow.
So that's I haven't seen press confirmation of that, but or media confirmation of that. It's what somebody sent us in a text message. So, then within that process, within that state of siege that the government has imposed, in order to facilitate the process by which they can set up a credible fraud. Within the way they're trying to set up their credible electoral fraud is for the Organization of American States to insist that the electoral authority do a recount of around 5,000 of the voting station results. But as Salvador Nasrallah and his team have stated, the conditions under which that recount take place have to be transparent.
Right.
And they have to satisfy certain criteria. For example, the Nasrallah and his team requested the tribunal to share their database with them so that they can compare the physical results. They have copies of all the voting station results, because at the end of election day in each voting station, the various party representatives sign off on the results for that particular voting station.
That's pretty standard.
And a copy is given to each of the political parties concerned. So Nasrallah has all those copies, but the tribunal isn't facilitating conditions that allow Nasrallah and his team, or anybody, to compare the results on those paper ballots signed off by all the political parties with what's in the database.
Right.
So what's going to happen is the OAS will say, "Oh well, there was a recount, and the result is still the same, but the conditions of the recount do not fulfill the perfectly reasonable criteria of being able to compare the paper results with what's in the digital database."
Right. What you have is an audit trail, and he had a refusal to conduct the audit.
Yeah, essentially. But that's not how it's going to be reported. Your New York Times and your Washington Post and the Guardian and the Le Monde and El País over in Europe, they're all going to report, "Well, there was a recount." And they're not going to report that the recount itself was fraudulent.
Yeah, and a correction, by the way, in the New York Times piece, they do mention that one person was killed. And the two paragraphs from the end, it's about 20 paragraphs in, it mentions...
Well, it's at least seven people that have been killed, among them this very unfortunate pregnant woman and her baby.
Yeah, she was
in a very advanced pregnancy. She and her baby died, and then there was this 17-year-old girl. So, and for the police to say that those people were somehow a threat to the authorities or a threat to national security is just completely ridiculous. But this brings us back, doesn't it? And to our conversation, it seems to me, to our conversation about. Why do people care about Honduras? Why is the United States interested at all? Because another reason is that Honduras, like Haiti, is where the United States authorities want to take the whole of Latin America. They want,
right.
and not just the whole of Latin America, but the United States itself. I think any black activist will recognize immediately in their own experience, what the Honduran authorities are doing to their own population in this electoral context.
More and more in the United States, actually, that whole condition is becoming generalized. You know, there's a special place in the heart of imperialism for black folks and people of color, but white workers and everyone in between have been learning over the past decades, with an intensification over the past few years, that they are not as privileged as they might have been led to believe.
right. So then I think that's also an important observation to bear in mind when we're trying to understand, well, what is going on in Honduras. It's very much stuff in a regional context. So if you look at what is the role of the Organization of American States, here you have a situation that is much more severe than what happened in Venezuela. And the law and order, the security policies of the Venezuelan authorities, all through the 4 months of extreme violence from Venezuela's opposition, backed by the United States, backed by the Organization of American States. And Luis Almagro, over the last month, has actually been criticized by leaders of Venezuela's opposition for opposing their efforts to enter into talks with the Venezuelan government. So then you look at, well, the look at how the elections panned out in Venezuela. There was the elections to the National Constituent Assembly, an extremely polarized situation, but you didn't get anything like what is happening in Honduras. And the opposite, and then that was followed by almost, what was it, 2 months later, 2.5 months later, by the regional elections for the state governorships, in which the Venezuelan government won a tremendous victory. They won, what was it, 18 of the 23 governorships?
Yep.
And the opposition accepted those results. You know, and there were the usual routine ritual cries of, oh, there was fraud. But there's nothing. But the subsequent audit, that the opposition party signed off on it. But the Organization of American States and Luis Almagro and the United States government and the European Union criticize that.
That's right.
And here they are essentially validating what people who would normally be very critical of Venezuela, social democrats, center-right people, are saying very clearly it's fraud.
Right. And, this unfortunately is the soft mode that the U.S. uses to maintain control there, as opposed to the actual outright military coups, which we, did get to see a taste of that in Honduras a few years back with Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama. And, Tony, yeah, we're going to have to stop there and come back next week and look at how this actually plays out. I appreciate your time and your insights, as usual. Thank you.
Okay, thanks a million, Don. Look forward to talking to you again.
Yep. And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.